Good evening or good morning, depending on you watch this, everybody. Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our September off-season podcast. Woo-hoo. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined on my side here by David Griggs. Down below, John Titel. Across from him, Joby Fortson. We are here. You know, we do this once a month during the off-season. This is our last of our off-season podcasts.
Yeah, this is the last off-season podcast. Our next podcast will be a preseason podcast. We're moving from the off-season to the preseason. Who's excited?
Yep. Come October, we'll be doing all our preseason previews and then getting right into the season in November, and it's around the corner. And I thought I wanted to start, before we get into things here, I want to start with a little behind the scenes things here at Hoops HD, actually, because the way these off-season podcasts actually work is that David will normally text me probably about a week or so before we do these shows and say, hey, it's time for the podcast. And I'm like, what? But then we reach a point where we say, hey, you know, so he actually sent me a text. I have it right here in front of me on my cell phone. Actually, I'll read this. He sent me a text about a week ago, said, hey, Chad, it's time for another show. And this will be the last one before we are in preseason mode. The problem is that right now I'm so disengaged. I'm pretty sure I think that college basketball starts in November. Other than that, I don't know what the hell is going on. That's pretty much what you said. Right,
yeah,
David?
That is what I said. Yeah.
Okay. I responded. I say we do the entire show about UConn football.
Yes.
His response, all caps, done with two exclamation marks. So tonight's show is about nothing but UConn football. Joby, your thoughts on the Holy Cross loss?
And of course, our good friend Zach could not be here tonight, which makes it way less fun.
Yeah, would have been a lot more fun. But seriously, we wanted to start off the show tonight by talking about some of the conference moves that have been made. If you've been living under the rock, if you didn't know about them, but of course, Texas and Oklahoma on their way in a couple of years now, depending, it could be as soon as next year, but right now it's officially a couple of years away from moving over to the SEC, Big 12. Talked about, you know, issues merging with the Pac-12 and everything, ended up instead sending out four invites to BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF. So, Titel, let me start with you here. A couple of years from now, we're going to have that great BYU-UCF conference rivalry coming.
We're going to have Houston and Kansas, which is worth the price of admission, if they can keep the glory at Houston of getting in the Final Four and Kansas's historic tradition of having Big 12 titles every single year for years and years and years in a row.
And we also, of course, have our defending national champions that we're going to be sticking around that league too, Joby and Baylor. So I don't know if the Big 12 is quite dead yet, even without Texas and Oklahoma.
Yeah, no, the Big 12 in basketball is not dead. I think because we were always talking about, for instance, last year being a perfect example, well, Kansas State and Iowa State weren't up to stuff, but the other eight teams were in competition or received bids, you know, with a very straight face out of the 10. You're talking 80. You take two of those out, but you're adding a BYU team that is traditionally in the hunt for a bid. You're adding a Houston team that made the Final Four, and you're adding a Cincinnati program that has so much tradition in it. And, you know, Memphis was there. Too bad they went with UCF. But the fact of the matter is the basketball will remain strong. I think it will remain solid kind of Big East level, which is good, which is
really
can compete with the ACC, et cetera, for the foreseeable future. The problem they will have is they are not a football conference. They will not be getting the football revenue that they've gotten in the past, which will hurt all the teams' infrastructure for all sports, including men's basketball, over time. They're the new American, but a better basketball brand. That's essentially what it is. And the bottom results are football drives the money train, plain and simple.
Right. Now,
and
football,
that'll hurt.
I'm sorry, football branding, and we're not football experts, or at least I'm not, but when you look at the top 25, you have BYU either in it or hovering around it. I know UCF just lost a game to Louisville, but I think they were 26th going into that. You have Cincinnati in the top 10. You have Memphis, a recent Sugar Bowl team. Like, the quality of football, while I'm not going to say that losing Texas and Oklahoma doesn't hurt, but the overall rankings seem to be still really strong, if not as strong as the rest of the power conferences. It's at least way, way, way stronger than the rest of the group of five.
David, I strongly disagree. It's a power four now. It's as Matt, you can look at rankings. BYU is legitimate, obviously, programming with a national brand. That was, and it was really smart for someone to finally get off the Sunday thing and offer them, because they're obvious, they bring more, they bring money and eyeballs. But it's often not, it's the traditional names. None of those teams are going to, until the playoff expands, none of those teams are going to be making a playoff, even a Cincinnati, who is a darn good football team. And we'll find out this weekend at Notre Dame, or next weekend at Notre Dame.
But but from a basketball standpoint, half of last year's Final Four resides in this league. Kansas is in this league. Now, some of these moves, what happens with Bedlam? Are they going to keep that going? And as all of you are well aware, because I've never let you forget it, they didn't keep the border war going.
Well, I guess, you know, we can kind of, you know, I don't know, look at Texas. Texas A&M will be returning now in the SEC. Yeah. So,
they didn't keep that one going either.
One of the side effects, though, of BYU's move over to the Big 12, Titel, let me ask you about this. You know, BYU now out of the West Coast Conference, you know, I don't know that they ever really truly fit in there. Just, they always kind of felt a little weird to me in there, but that was, you know, it was Gonzaga and a bunch of nobodies. Then it became Gonzaga, BYU and a bunch of nobodies. Are we back to just Gonzaga and a bunch of nobodies here in the West Coast? No offense to St. Mary's.
That's a lot of offense to St. Mary's, Chad, but yes, it is them and a bunch of nobodies. No, Gonzaga should be able to run the table for the foreseeable future. As long as they can keep their coach on the up and up, I think they'll be okay.
And I think to Gonzaga, this is a good point. I think to them, they look at it as, all right, two more out-of-conference games. That's two more top 10 teams we can
play. Well, I don't know. You know, it's a chance to play two more conference foes because they actually cut down the West Coast Conference schedule from the full round robin, if you remember, because Gonzaga wanted more non-conference games.
Yeah.
Gonzaga gets whatever they want in the West Coast Conference.
They lose some branding, and that's no small thing. But this conference, we've talked repeatedly about how it is not under the radar. It's not Gonzaga and a bunch of UTR teams. The coaching is getting a lot better. I think the programs have elevated them. I'm not saying that it's not a loss, you know, to not have BYU, but St. Mary's is good and San Francisco is much improved and Pepperdine is, I think this league is going to be fine.
I don't know that the league is making the big step. I think it's going to continue making little steps, but you know, I guess the other thing here is David, is that they're, every time this conference moves, there's going to be a fallout. I don't know necessarily that we're going to see the West Coast Conference dying to get somebody else to replace them, but I think we're going to see the American looking at some teams and looking at, you know, if you want to look at football teams, it could be looking at Conference USA or the Sun Belt or you know, I mean, they're not going to be looking at UConn. Nobody cares about UConn football, New Mexico State somewhat. You know, I don't think I've ever really actually heard that, but you know,
maybe Conference USA. Carolina jumped up real quick because they're starting.
Well,
they have strong fan bases and new markets. Coastal in particular has a growing.
And you look even at a school like Liberty out there, who's now a football school. Mm-hmm. There are programs out there that
good football school. Their quarterback is one of the eight right now, according to Vegas, one of the top eight Heisman runners.
And it is possible to make some incredible jumps. So you look at UC, we just talked about UCF, for example. UCF 25 years ago was playing in what is now the A7, the Trans-America Conference. They're now going to be a Big 12 school. So, you know, but David, go ahead.
Well, what's being rumored now? Mm-hmm. And I'm inclined to think that it's more than just a rumor. And I'm not saying it makes sense, because everything that I thought the American would look at doing involves what you said, like a UAB, a Georgia State, a program that's in a big market that's, you know, raised its profile and had some success. Coastal Carolina, another really good option, especially in football. We always say we love the Front Range, and we do. Colorado State and Air Force to the American is being rumored. And I'm not really sure why. Navy is not a full member of the American. They're an affiliate member for football. To get Air Force into that umbrella, so the Air Force-Navy game, I have no explanation as to why, and this is not a knock on Colorado State or Air Force, but when you're thinking what is the more logical, probable move that the American would want to make, and who are the schools that would want to jump at the chance, I would think UAB, Coastal, Georgia State, the exact type of schools you just mentioned.
Western Kentucky is one that came to mind.
Yes.
Very true. Very true on Western.
But that's a school that's decent in football, too.
Well, and yeah. I wonder how good, I just don't know this, but I have a feeling the Mountain West TV contract for football is awful. I mean, I can barely find their games. They're going to be on CBS, though, this weekend, for those who are interested.
They got a CBS Sportsnet, I think, one game a week, and that's it.
It can't pay a lot. It really can't pay a lot. I would think that and there's an attraction, the Air Force, like you point out, the Air Force Navy, but Colorado State gets you into the Denver market. Now, Air Force alone doesn't do that. Colorado State is the state school, and thus it expands your market in a market that's gettable because it's not like Colorado is tearing things up. You know, right now it is a split city, though Colorado is the superior team right
well,
now.
Well, is so it split knows? Three ways? Because there is a third out there. Colorado State, Wyoming is at least in football, the signature Mountain West rivalry, at least front range. Never mind. Colorado State, Wyoming is a bigger rivalry than Colorado State Air Force.
Let me go from here to Titel. Are we going to end up in a situation where we're going to have tons of moves over the next several years because you fill in the American, now Conference USA or Mountain West is looking to add people, and then you know, they're taking from the next level conference, the next level, and we just end up with some craziness. Are we looking at that effect?
Had you asked me 6 months ago, I would have said no way. I thought that the system was working pretty well, but I think Texas and Oklahoma have started an avalanche of movement from all teams at all levels of D1 in all parts of the country. I don't know if it's going to be something where we end up with like five power conferences of like 20 to 25 teams each or something insane like that. But the fact that it's even a possibility, I mean, I never thought we'd see four teams join the Big 12 overnight. And that seems to have happened.
Yeah. And now we've got a 16 team SEC. David, the Atlantic Sun just sent an invite to Austin Peay out of the OVC.
Yeah.
And they're talking about there's up to four current D2 schools they're talking to.
Yes.
We could be seeing a 16 team ASUN in a couple of years here as well.
Very soon. As soon as, not even a couple of years, it could be next year. Mm-hmm. A good number of those programs are D2 programs. They would not be full D1 members until they go through the transition. And the Atlantic Sun, the appeal to Austin Peay, I want to say, is it Eastern Kentucky and
Jacksonville State.
And there's a Southland team that's moving as well. Is it Central
Arkansas? I believe it was Central Arkansas, yes.
Okay. The appeal is they are looking to collectively move all the way up to the FBS and be an 11th conference. Like the schools that are joining it are doing it of the understanding that they're all going to transition up and all form basically an Atlantic Sun football conference. North Alabama in that league, Liberty obviously in that league.
Well, not in football, but
not in football, but I bet they would be if it became a D1 league. But so that is the appeal. Why would Austin Peay? Why would EKU? These are schools that have long wanted to go to the FBS, but have not exactly had the invite and didn't want to go up as an independent. Now they don't have to. I think that's the attraction of the ASUN. West Georgia, a D2 school going right all the way up to the FBS, if they accept this invite. What I was a little bit floored. Was it Lincoln Memorial in Queens?
Lincoln Memorial, Queens College out of North Carolina, and there was a fourth, yes.
Yeah, why would they want to bloat it out to 16 unless they want an even balance between schools that play football and schools that don't? A 16 team under the radar conference, which is typically a one bid league, just sounds insane to me because that is a lot of people to be sharing a very small piece of the pie of, because when you're an under the radar conference, if you're not one of the Big Ten that's on the Hoops HD report, 8 years out of 10, you're getting one team, you're getting one unit, and that's it. And has the Atlantic Sun ever won an NCAA tournament game? If Stalica was here, he would know. Maybe they have, but
yes,
I can't.
They've won tournament games, yes.
Oh, they have? Okay. I can't remember the last time it happened unless it
Liberty,
was
Liberty, Gulf Coast.
Liberty, thank you. Yeah, Liberty. Okay. Yes, they have.
Yeah, Florida Gulf Coast was a Sun team.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, I stand correct.
David, there's only one conference that's never won an NCAA tournament. They've never gotten out of the first round of the NCAA tournament, and that is the Northeast. So they have won play-in games.
Okay. Yeah. But to my point, that's still a lot of teams to be sharing what is normally going to be one unit with. 16 teams for an under-the-radar league makes no sense. I think 9 or 10 is a better number. And are they even – you kind of wonder, is that league going to split in half, have some sort of scheduling agreement? That way they get at least two out of 16 in, and then just have a football-only football-only affiliate conference.
Which kind of brings me to another point here. You're looking at the Sun Belt is a conference that is mostly that's an FBS conference. They do have two members that are non-football playing members in Little Rock and Texas Arlington. I'm hearing rumors that those two teams are kind of almost being pushed out of the conference at this point, and might be looking for other homes because the Sun Belt wants everybody to play all the sports. But there's all kinds of other moves that are already being rumored. Chicago State needs a home after this year. They'll be in the WAC this season. They have already been thrown out come next season. Interestingly enough, I'm hearing the MEAC as a rumor for them. to go for playing the WAC to the MEAC is
Chicago State an HBCU? I didn't think
they're not. I don't believe they are an HBCU. No.
Okay.
But let's kind of move on to another topic here. We want to discuss also, Tytel. Let me start with you. The name, image, and likeness rules that have come into place as we're getting into the start of the football season. We've seen on the football side, we've seen some gross amount of monies that some players are now making. We're definitely, I think, starting to see it in the basketball side, especially with what Memphis was able to do with a couple of the guys that the freshmen that they brought in this year. What are your thoughts on what we're seeing so far?
I think that schools are starting to feel their way around, and the athletes and the administration, to get it all together, because there's all sorts of legal implications and all sorts of millions, if not tens of millions of dollars being thrown around. I was interviewing, one of my season preview interviews was with Haley Van Lith, who's a sophomore guard at Louisville. You might not know her. Her NIL rights are allegedly valued at like $1 million a year for like a person you probably haven't heard of unless you are a big time women's basketball fan. So imagine like what a superstar on the men's side, perhaps her boyfriend, Jalen Suggs, who's now in the NBA, would make if they're like on national TV playing big time games every weekend, getting interviewed. Like, brands want to be around people who are getting eyeballs, right?
And what I'm hearing is the reason why Imani Bates, who was the last major recruit to sign for anybody, signed with Memphis, John, was, because he got an NIL deal in the area, correct?
Yeah, I mean, Joby, you know a lot about, like, the money and the business side of sports. I assume that, like, it might be a shifting landscape where if you have a booster who's willing to pay a guy $1 million legally, that might get the recruit there that otherwise they would not get ordinarily.
Yeah, I mean, it's the question is, and this is the question still not fully vetted out, is are we merely taking the cash that was being distributed and now just making it legal? Because we all know that there was under the table stuff going on. It was, I hate to sound this way, it was relatively rampant. And now is that, now you've, it would be dumb to do it. NIL you still have to have a service that meets the market element. So you can't just walk up with a bag of cash. But come on, you can find a way to make it work. If you're too lazy to make it work under the existing rules, which are very loose, undefined, et cetera, well, then you know what? You deserve to be. At least the booster deserves to be banned, because you're too stupid and uncreative to be able to come up with the right way to do it.
Yep.
It will be very interesting, though, to see how this plays out. I think the name brands will get their folks, but I think also the compliance departments that are already there and what state you reside on, because a lot of this is governed by state law. There is no federal law. The state you reside in will also matter, but I think the rich will get richer to a degree because they will have the resources to figure out how to navigate this early.
Well, yeah, in a lot of this, Tytel mentioned the player from, you know, Louisville's women's team. The reason she is so valuable is because of the social media presence she has. Now, that's not, I'm sure being a basketball player has helped her grow that, and being, you know, dating an NBA player has also helped grow that. But just like, she has more followers than even I have, believe it or not. She has more followers than a lot of famous players, than a lot of highly paid players, and that's what she's being able to monetize. A lot of the big money, not all of it, but a lot of it that student athletes are getting is coming from basically being social media influencers. Am I saying that right? Like, and that, like, because before she was not able to monetize that at all and be within the rules, because you couldn't, your social media presence fell under the category of name, image, and likeness. And if you were a college player in any sport, you weren't allowed to monetize that, but now you can. So just getting it out there, it isn't just that she's a great player. As you said, like, women's basketball doesn't get the popularity that men's does, but her as an individual is worth a fortune because of her social media presence.
Right. So, you know, obviously this is going to play out, but I think we're going to see, I think it's like Joby said, that we're going to see a ton of money, but it's probably just the money that was getting to people's hands anyhow. We're just now making it legit, and maybe that's a good thing, to just make it legitimate and have it all above board here. The other major change, though, in addition to the name, agent, image, and likeness rules heading to this season, is the transfer rules. You no longer, for your first transfer, have to sit out a year. Even all these players that did already transfer and sat out a year, I think every single waiver has been granted, at least heading into this season. And Joby, before we even started the podcast, you mentioned that we're almost running into a situation here where, with kids transferring, not having to sit out a year, plus all these players getting an extra year of eligibility because of COVID, rosters are running out of space, and we've got kids sitting out there that thought they could transfer.
They are, unfortunately, out of space with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. I think that I can't remember. It's either 400 or 800. I know that's a wide swath, but I remember hearing it. We're talking several hundred. How about that? That's the best way to say it. That there physically is no space. And what I, you know, hey, kid makes a decision, you know, is right. But I worry about particularly a kid who may have been run off, you know, so to speak, with no landing space. It's not just about, especially for someone who has no landing space, it's not just about, well, he doesn't have a team to go to. His education ends. And in many cases, these kids, you know, most of these kids, I mean, there's only so many people on an NBA roster. There's only, you know, there's only a few that matriculate, even overseas, you know, et cetera, is limited. There are a lot of kids who might not get their education. It might be an unfortunate side effect to all the things coming at a confluence at once with the extra year of eligibility, the transfer rule. And I hope, my hope on the side is just not too many kids' lives. And I'm not here to blame the transfer rules or anything. I'm just thinking about the kids in this question. And it's a real life issue, is there are going to be people's lives who are going to be severely altered in a negative way. And I hope it's as few as possible.
Well, and Tytel, from the team standpoint, from the coach's standpoint, is there suddenly a whole new level of recruiting that I think that almost you've got we had the old one and done recruiting versus recruiting for the 4-year players. Now you've got to recruit the transfer portal in ways you never did before.
Yes, you have to be fast and be good at it. For example, in terms of like instantly rebuilding a team, I look at the Gators. So Coach Mike White He's got a solid front line in terms of Colin Castleton, who ironically was a transfer from Michigan a couple of years ago. Anthony DeRuggi, ironically a transfer from La Tech a couple of years ago. And God willing and health willing, Keontae Johnson. He rebuilt his backcourt this year, like from the transfer portal. Tyree Appleby, Cleveland State. Myrian Jones, Penn State. Flandres Fleming Jr., Charleston Southern. Brandon McKissick, Kansas City. I don't know if they're a Final Four team, but they're a good team. And their entire backcourt was built like overnight from the transfer portal.
Yeah, I've seen, talk about Houston, a Final Four team last year. You lose Grimes and Giroux and more guys, but hey, you bring in Kyler Edwards. You bring in this kid Moore from UCSB, who was a double-digit scorer. You can lose key guys suddenly and be good. And it may be, David, if you just stick with the guys you had, you're not going to get better as opposed to the past where the experience counted.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. One of the things that's curious to me, aside from UAB, who I think added six players to a team that won over 20 games last year, when you look at the under-the-radar schools that were good and look to be as good this year or better, and I mean like Cleveland State, Santa Barbara, I know you mentioned them, Belmont, everybody back. Loyola lost their coach, but everybody else is back. Or most of the contributors, Iona looking really strong. You just look at it and it's just like, there's a lot of under the radar teams that were good last year that returned the core of their talent and then somehow got better by adding players to the out of the transfer portal. And are we going to see an unusual amount of teams from under the radar inside the bubble this year? God, some of these teams are good.
It'd be nice to see.
What I'm also saying with a lot of these transfers is it's players that were originally recruited by the school. They may have chosen another path.
Yeah.
And then the relationship that was built a few years earlier can then reblossom. It's like, wow, maybe, it's not just quite working here at State U, but Tech. I was offered there and they reach out, and the transfer portal at least allows you to test that water to see if Tech, there's no tampering. Tech sees you in the transfer portal. If they jump on you, then, great. And we've seen quite a bit of that. The last year, the perfect example is Johnny Juzang, who, was recruited by UCLA, chose Kentucky. UCLA was in the running for him back in the day, and now he's gone back home because he is from California and helped the Bruins, was probably the key cog, in my opinion, for the Bruins to make their Final Four run.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of that. Actually, we saw, in Cincinnati, I think three or four guys followed Wes Miller from Greensboro to Cincinnati right away. And, you're seeing guys go back and forth between schools. They leave a school for a year and then they return to it again after a year. But David,
what I just said was a long-winded way of me saying it isn't just the power schools or the schools that are like on the radar that are using the transfer portal to get rich. A lot of under the radar schools have too. And when you look at a lot of them, it's like they've used it to make themselves a lot better.
A couple of topics we want to hit on tonight. A little bit of coaching news. First of all, Mark Few got a DWI. Ty Tell, do you think anything comes of this, or is it just it happened? not a good thing to have happened, but he learns his lesson and goes on.
I certainly hope he learned his lesson. We're talking about a guy who was almost a national champion this past year, undefeated. He's the best winning percentage of any active coach in Division I. He should be and is smart enough to not get in trouble. Granted, this wasn't like driving 100 miles an hour at 2 a.m. or something. Like, it could have been a lot worse. But he's a smart guy and he should know better. And I hope that he gets his life together and doesn't have to deal with this again.
Well, talking about guys that did get in trouble, David, for doing something that I don't really know what they did wrong. Chris Mack has been suspended for the first six games at Louisville this year because he had an attempted blackmail against him.
Yes, as best I can tell, he was being extorted by a former friend and colleague. I don't think Dino Gaudio and Chris Mack are buddies anymore. I could be wrong about that, but I'm venturing to say that they're not. And he was a victim here. And the reason he got suspended was because he didn't properly report how he was being victimized. Now, I don't know all the specifics about this. I don't know if Louisville, there could be 100 different reasons that this happened, and maybe it isn't quite as outrageous as what it sounds like on the surface. But on the surface, it sounds pretty outrageous. You were being extorted and you didn't report it properly the way we wanted, we would have liked for you to. So you're suspended 5 games without pay. That's unbelievably outrageous.
From the school that brought you strippers in the dorm.
Right.
You would have been better off bringing more strippers in, honestly. Right, Joey? Yeah.
If it had been a stripper who was extorting him, it would have been okay.
I still haven't figured this out, but you know, at least it's going to be like the early season games. It'll be, I think, by the end of November, he'll be back on the court, right. And we'll have forgotten about the whole thing by March, unless they go like 0-5 or 0-6 or something ridiculous,
right? And it does raise the question: what high school will hire Dino Gaudio to coach their JV team next? That's about the only job he could probably get. Good grief.
I guess on that note, that covers all the topics I had written down here. So why don't I run through each of us here for any other final thoughts at the end of our September podcast here. Tytel, let me start with you.
I just wanted to look ahead to the future. Some people might have thought that Duke would take a step backwards next year after Coach K retires, or that he might leave the cupboard bare. I assure you that is not the case. They now have 3 top 10 recruits for next year. Derek Lively, 7-1. Derek Whitehead, 6-6. Kyle Filipowski, 6'10". John Shire, you're going to be just fine.
And you know, what comes from that I mentioned is, you know, from my understanding is that for the recruits, even for this year, Coach K kind of lets Shire do all the recruiting, even for this upcoming season. You know, he's kind of sitting back and being the X's and O guys for his little farewell tour. And Joby, we're going to have fun with the Coach K farewell tour this year, aren't we? I know as a Virginia guy, you're going to love that one, huh?
It's just insufferable is a adjective for one for some reason.
But let me stick with you for your final thought.
Well, mine was touched on by Tytel. We've seen a lot of, it is remarkable how NIL has made such a big impact, because if you look at whether it's ESPN's early ratings, CBS's early ratings, general Vegas odds, all of a sudden out of nowhere, Memphis, pre Imani Bates, there were anywhere in that 20 to 30 range, you know, maybe front part. But now they are a consensus, like 7 or 8. The question is, because we can all do the math, did they really go from a, you know, first weekend and out team to an elite 8 team overnight? Does Imani Bates really bring that? It'll be very interesting. That is what the knee-jerk response has been over this. And so maybe NIL will also be bringing that excitement, not just to Monty Bates, but the preseason. I mean, if I'm living in the city of Memphis, hey, yeah, Monty Bates, yeah, I might want to go see him, but I might want to go see a top 10 team, you know, as well, that then brings on. So it actually might be an investment that pays off at the box office as well.
You know what? I think for Memphis, it may also be, you know, I don't know how Penny's X's and O's have been, but he's upgraded his assistant bench. Like him or not, Larry Brown is going to be sitting there this season, among other playbills, even though he's 5,000 years old. So,
have you watched Memphis at all? His X's and O's have been horrible.
Well, that's why I'm saying that upgrading your assistant coaching staff may help with that. But Dave, before I go to you, throw my final thought out there, and you know, I want to really spend a quick moment to congratulate the Pac-12. You know, I'm an East Coast guy, but the Pac-12. Nobody liked their commissioner, Larry Scott. They got rid of him. So congratulations to them. One of the very first basketball moves done by the new commissioner, signing a conference challenge series with the SWAC. That is high class move, living up to the Pac-12, living up to its opponents. It's level of competition there. But David, let me let you finish things off.
I actually kind of like this from
a SWAC standpoint. It's amazing. Yeah.
It is a whole, like, it isn't just bye games against SWAC teams. Like, they are going on the road to play SWAC teams, and why not? Like, it boosts your metrics. They're winnable road games. They'll likely win. the schools that they're playing in the SWAC will probably get more money than they would have gotten from a bye game because they might sell the game out. And it probably, if you're the Pac-12 team, you're probably spending less to go on the road to play that game. So strategic. My final thought is a little bit outside the scope of what we normally talk about. We, 98% of what we do, maybe higher, is Division I men's basketball. Brescia University, and I hope I'm not mispronouncing that. If I am, I apologize. Out of the NIIA, has hired a new athletic director. Did you see this? It's Sarah Gaylor. She'd been with the Milwaukee Bucks. She's been in basketball. New AD at Brescia University. Oh, yeah, and she's also the new men's head basketball coach, the first women's basketball coach, or the first woman to be – God, I wish we could edit that, but Chad won't do it. No, the first woman to be named the head coach of a men's collegiate team, so far as I know. I've long thought that this was a great untapped resource. A lot of problems that players have with male authority figures. If you have a woman on the staff, which very few staffs do, but if you do, it could really help with the chemistry and the dynamics. There seems to be this whole notion that they won't be, that players won't respect them as an authority figure. I don't know what kind of women you have in your life, but I think they absolutely would. I think when you are eliminating half of the human race, you're eliminating some of the best people that could ever work and coach in the game. I'm glad it's finally been done. I hope that she's successful, not because so much for Bashia, but because I want the sort of paradigm to be broken that women cannot be successful head coaches in men's basketball, because they absolutely could be.
Titel's told me it's pronounced Brescia. Is that right? Brescia?
Brescia. Excuse me for mispronouncing it.
But I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. On behalf of David Griggs over there, mispronouncing school names, John Titel below me, Joby Forza to his side, I'm Chad Sherwood. This has been our September podcast. We'll be back probably early to mid-October with the start of our preseason previews. We're going to go through all the conferences leading right up to opening day, November 9th. So it's getting close. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll talk to you again real soon. And now I have to figure out how to stop this thing from recording. And I can't do that, actually. Here we go.
Okay, yeah. Thanks for joining us. I mispronounced school, but at least I know how to turn the damn thing off.